We will discuss the value of the humanities this hour and the role the humanities play in our daily lives. We'll talk with the chairman of the National Endowment of the Humanities. The NEH turns 50 years old this year and is celebrating decades of investing into projects that help us learn more about the humanities, fields like history, philosophy, literature, art, politics. And we will talk about how the study of the humanities can help us solve the problems of today. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and we wonder, what value do the humanities have in your life? Do you think higher education should continue to provide a strong focus on the humanities? Or do you think colleges should be doing more to train students more specifically for the workforce? Do you think taxpayer dollars should fund more or less research and education in the humanities? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Bro Adams, the chairman of the National Endowment for the Humanities. Good morning.
Good morning. Nice to be here.
It's nice to have you with us. We tried to have you with us last week when you were in Madison for the national meeting of the Consortium for Humanities, Centers, and Institutes. How did that go?
It was great. It was a very interesting gathering of institutions. Humanities centers at colleges and universities are doing very interesting and, I think, forward-looking things in the humanities. And so as the chairman of the endowment, it was great to be with them and have a chance to spend time talking to them.
Yeah. Well, I touched on it, but when we are talking about the humanities, what are we talking about?
Well, there's at least two ways of thinking about that. Sometimes we talk about the humanities in terms of their academic being, if you will, and we talk about different kinds of disciplines in the humanities, such as philosophy and history and the study of language and the study of culture and anthropology, linguistics, and so forth. Personally, I start in a somewhat different place, and I think primarily about the understanding of our history, of our culture, of our ideas and our values. And in one way or another, the humanities are always about those things, whether they're in the discipline of history or in the discipline of philosophy, or wherever they are, they're heading back into those places where we actually live and experience the world. So I'm partial to talking about those things as opposed to talking about academic disciplines, but it is, of course, the case that, as in the sciences and social sciences, the humanities live in universities in these various disciplinary contexts. But in a more public way, I think it's the place I want to start is with history and culture, ideas and values.
Yeah. And you would like, tell us a little bit about the NEH's initiative during this year, your 50th anniversary, where you want to get more of the humanities, out in the public square. How can the humanities help us solve problems of today?
Well, the new initiative is called the Common Good, the Humanities in the Public Square, and it really began in my thinking about the world as we have it now in this country and the various challenges that we face as a country and society, and with my conviction that the humanities are central to thinking about and solving, if that's the right word in the case of some of these challenges, and solving or at least approaching and understanding those things. We live in a world that's awash, I think, in issues and challenges that are very rich in their potential for the humanities, and where we really need the humanities to cope with what we're living through. And so for me, this comes down to wanting to inspire and encourage humanities scholars and humanities organizations to think about those things out loud and in ways that engage the public, broadly speaking, in those kinds of discussions. I'll give you a good example that's right on the front burner here today in Washington. The Congress this last week for reasons that we all know, has been talking about the Patriot Act and the renewal of certain provisions with respect to the security of the United States. And the debate there is really about the balance between liberty and privacy on the one hand, and security and the technological invasion, if you will, of our privacy on the basis of national security issues. And this is really a conflict or a tension in values. On the one hand, our commitment to liberty and privacy. On the other hand, our understanding that we live in a world where there are certain threats and where technology can be enormously powerful in helping us deal with some of those threats. So the argument that's going on in Congress and to some degree in public, though I'd like to see it more actively in public, is really an argument about the proper relationship between these values. There's no technical solution to that tension. There's no technical resolution, if by that we mean some kind of nearly scientific way of deriving an answer. It's really talking about what we value and where we place the emphasis in our values and how we work through these conflicts. There are many other issues like that out there that surround us in the world that again, are not going to be solved by technical reasoning or scientific reasoning. They are going to be solved by the application of our principles and by an understanding of the context in which we live. So that's where the humanities, I think, can provide an enormous contribution to public discussion of things that are important to all of us.
Yeah. So the NEH launched this Common Good initiative in January with the stated purpose of engaging humanities scholars and organizations in these issues playing out in public life. Why are you doing this?
Well, I want to, first of all, because I think it can help demonstrate the relevance of the humanities to the lives we actually live. So that's one very important role of this program and the broader role of the National Endowment for the Humanities. Secondly, I think they can actually contribute to our capacity to deal with these things. So it's both good for the country, I think, and good for the humanities to have this kind of discussion and engagement. And I feel that there's a contribution both to the humanities community, but also to the broader public good.
In a speech that you gave to the National Press Club in January, you said that our democracy relies on our citizens' knowledge of political history, plus the principles and values that history was built upon. What do you mean by that?
Well, it's another very good way in which we can talk about the importance of humanities in public life. We live in a democracy, arguably the greatest and most successful democracy in history. But the success of the country and the success of the democratic form of our politics and governance really depends on the idea of the citizen. And the citizen really depends upon at least two things. One, or three things, I would say. One, an understanding of our political history and how we become who we are over time. And secondly, a familiarity with the fundamental principles of liberal democracy. That involves, an acquaintance with our founding principles, but it involves also an acquaintance with some of the great turning points and moments of the evolution of those principles over time. I think it also assumes an acquaintance with the broad features of the country as we experience it now. So people need to be literate in what's happening around us in ways that connect us and our contemporary situation to our past. You can't have a robust democratic society without a robust democratic political culture, and you can't have that without strong citizenship, and you can't have citizenship without these other things. So the humanities are, in that sense, critical to the preservation of a robust democracy in the United States.
You know, many people may not have much of a picture of the work that the NEH does to support these fields and these efforts. Tell us exactly what NEH does.
NEH functions as a public foundation. That is to say, we are a funder of projects that grow across, that span the country and span all the possible disciplines and applications of the humanities. We do that through a couple of basic programs. We have a very active research program where we fund scholars, particularly, or groups of scholars, in various kinds of humanities research, everything from ancient history and culture and civilizations to up to and including contemporary objects of scholarship having to do with things that are very current. We have a very active education program that funds teachers and teachers' professional development in the fields of the humanities. We have a very active and significant public program where we fund public projects in the humanities all over the country and all kinds of projects in museums and libraries. We do a lot of documentary film funding. I'll talk about one of those projects in just a second. We do a lot of work in radio, for example. So there's a very active public program, which is probably the way most people would experience us. We also do some very significant work in the preservation of cultural materials and heritage, and in the making those cultural artifacts and objects and accessible to the public. I'll give you a good example. We're doing a project with the Library of Congress where we're digitizing and making publicly available every American newspaper published between the mid-1830s and the mid-1920s.
Wow.
A lot of those newspapers are threatened with disappearance because, of course, they're very frail materials. So we're working in concert with the Library of Congress in states across the United States to make sure that we preserve these cultural assets for future scholarship, for future community use, and those kinds of things. We also have a very interesting program that we run with the National Science Foundation documenting endangered languages throughout North America so that these important linguistic communities and forms are preserved for the future. And we do a lot of work in preservation with libraries who are working with rare materials. We do film preservation, all those kinds of things that we have to do as a country to keep our cultural heritage intact.
Yeah, and we have a short break. When we come back, we'll talk about some of those some of the projects. I know that public broadcasting fans will be familiar with, and we'll talk about other ways the humanities are still relevant and still important in our daily lives with our guest, Bro Adams, the chairman of the National Endowment for the Humanities. The NEH will turn 50 this year, and it's celebrating decades of investing in libraries and museums and other projects. Meanwhile, nationwide funding levels for humanities research, education, and programs are still recovering from the recession. We're talking about how and why the humanities matter, and we're welcoming your questions. We're welcoming your own experiences. Are you a fan of the humanities? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. We're we're discussing the value of the humanities with the chairman of the National Endowment for the Humanities, Bro Adams. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. What value do you see in the humanities? How do you see the humanities affecting your daily life? And we wonder if what you think of the humanities helping us solve various issues and problems of today. Bro Adams, you were talking about some of the projects that the NEH is involved in funding. One of them that I'm sure our listeners are very familiar with is the Ken Burns public television documentary on the Roosevelts was one of your projects, wasn't it?
Indeed it was, and we've been one of Ken's principal funders since the very beginning of his career. His first film, The Brooklyn Bridge, was funded by NEH, and we've been involved in almost everyone, not everyone, but almost everyone since then, including the Roosevelts and his upcoming film on the history of the Vietnam War. And that's a great example of a kind of storytelling and historical work that we do, which is broadly accessible by and for the public, and which really tells us the story of the American nation and its history in a variety of different kinds of ways. There's another documentary project that I'll mention now because we've just put out an announcement about this. We've been funding the making of films about various American communities, including so far the Italian-American community and experience, Jewish-American community experience. And we just finished funding a film called Latino Americans, which documents the history of Latino Americans in the Americas over the last 500 years. And in partnership with the American Library Association, we have just announced that 203 libraries and museums and other organizations, including colleges and universities, were given programming grants to show this film publicly and then to create education programs around the film and around the subject. It's a great example of what we do, and it's a great example of the partnership that we have in this case with the American Library Association to bring this amazingly interesting history of Latino Americans in America to the general public and to give them opportunities to engage that material in a public way.
What brought you personally to the humanities?
Well, I was a student in the 1960s. I went to college in 1965. I had a rough year, my first year in college, and I decided at the end of that year that I would leave college, and I also decided somewhat impulsively to join the Army. And I went into the Army in the summer of 1966. I had a three-year experience, including a year in Vietnam from 1968 to 1969. And I think that whole experience made me enormously curious about a lot of things, but especially about what I had experienced in the military. And when I got back to college, I was drawn immediately to philosophy, partly because of a very significant professor I had at Colorado College who had written about his own experiences in World War II, and he had published a beautiful book on that experience called The Warriors, and I got exposed to that book almost as soon as I got back, and I was hooked on philosophy from that point forward because it helped me deal with the questions of meaning and experience that I had, and I think that was really the anchoring event for me that took me on to a career in philosophy and then as a college administrator and finally now here to NEH.
How would you describe the the state of the humanities, the state of funding for the humanities? Are the humanities in crisis?
I don't know if I'd use the word crisis. I would say that there are lots of pressures on the humanities coming from a number of different directions. And I think the most important challenge that we face is the gradual, what appears to be a gradual weakening of the commitment in this country, both in high schools and in colleges and universities, to what I call the education of the whole person. This notion that we're not only creating, as we educate people, people who will go on to have careers of various kinds and various kinds of economic and business organizations. We're also creating people who will have whole lives, and they will have lives particularly, especially perhaps as citizens. So the humanities are an anchoring element of that conviction of educating the whole person. And I think it would be a terrible mistake for this country to back away from that idea. It's been a uniquely American idea in some sense, the idea of liberal learning, which is another way of talking about educating the whole person, has been particularly powerful in the American context, and particularly in the American university and college context. And seeing it under pressure for reasons that we understand, including the recent recession, deep anxiety about how one enters the economy and how one gets a job and how one flourishes in this economy, and resource pressure on colleges and universities that are caused by a lot of different complicated things, not just the recession, but as you know, in Wisconsin, by certain changes in the financial structure of state funding of all kinds of things. Those resource pressures combined with this slackening of the commitment to liberal learning, I think pose real risks to us as a society. And we can't let go of this idea. We will do no service to the country as a democracy. We will do no service to people who go on, of course, to live in many dimensions besides the professional and economic dimension, where the educational value of the humanities is so clear. So that's the real fundamental issue, I think, and it's the reason I'm so eager to speak out publicly about the importance of educating the whole person and keeping that commitment alive in all of our educational settings. I think in secondary education, another pressure that's been very important is testing. And I understand the logic of testing, and I understand the language of accountability, but we can't throw the baby out with the bathwater. We've got to be careful that we don't so complicate the curriculum in high school with the testing regime that we lose sight of what we're trying to do with respect to the ultimate goals of education.
Well, you mentioned certainly Wisconsin is involved in this debate. Discussions about funding our university system have involved the question of whether students should be focusing more on majors where they know they can get jobs, and whether the university's mission should be one that would focus on meeting the needs of the state's workforce. And there was actually a taking out of the state law the mission of the university, the Wisconsin idea that you know there would be sifting and winnowing, looking for the truth, that students should go forward and do good in the world. What is your reaction to that specific debate as to whether the university should do more to meet the needs of the state's workforce and less of this Wisconsin idea?
Well, Wisconsin is not alone in facing these financial pressures. It's happening across the country, and states have contracted in terms of their, most states have contracted in terms of their resources, and that's had implications for education and many other things that states do. I understand the budget pressures, and I understand the problems that those budget pressures create for legislators and governors and everybody involved in public life. But it's a mistake. It's a terrible mistake to lose sight of this broader purpose of education, even within a reduced configuration of resources. It's one thing to, you know, deal with a contracting resource situation. It's another to say that, well, we should set aside most of what we thought about education and its purposes and focus it on this one thing, because I think both for the democracy and for the quality of people's lives as they actually go out and live them, we're shortchanging them, and we're weakening the structures of American culture that have permitted this country to be so successful. We're not successful simply because we have technical savvy and knowledge. We're successful because we have a vibrant democracy. We're successful because we have people who can think in broad and encompassing ways about things that matter. And so it's very, very short-sighted to limit our vision, even if it's constrained by resources, which, again, I understand. It's a real mistake to limit our vision of what the purpose of education is to a purely technical and technocratic understanding of what matters. We'll regret it, and the problem is, of course, we won't know how much we regret it until it's very hard to recover it. So while I understand these pressures, and I'm sympathetic to the hard work that legislators and governors have to do, I also think we have to keep a balanced view of what education is about.
We are discussing the humanities, the value of the humanities. We're talking right now about the value of a liberal arts education, and we wonder if you have thoughts or questions on this. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Do you think higher education should continue to provide a strong focus on the humanities? Or do you think that colleges ought to be doing more in terms of a state's economic development or training students more specifically for the workforce? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Now the lines are full. Kathy in Fitchburg is with us. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. I've been thinking about the question you posed, I don't know, maybe 15, 20 minutes ago about what humanities mean to me. And I am a liberal arts grad. So it means a lot to me. And I think about all of the earlier you guys were talking about some of the films and the Roosevelt film, which I watched earlier this year, and some of the Ken Burns, as well as I'm thinking about book clubs that I've been to at libraries that have been funded actually for the Wisconsin, from the Wisconsin Council of Humanities, and how I love literature and I love reading, and it's kind of a solitary thing. But when you go to a book discussion group, and you hear other people's perspectives, I've been like blown away about how something I've missed in a book that someone else picked up, or other, you know, just other people's viewpoints. And I think that in society, in our American society that's so polarized, if we had more emphasis on the other points of view of not only the authors and the film producers and the people's lives we learn about, but then opportunities to share and discuss so that we can understand other people's viewpoints and not feel so polarized about everything, I think it would be a wonderful thing.
A reaction, Bro Adams?
Well, I like the notion very much, and thank you for the observation. It's one I agree with, and it resonates with my own image of the humanities in the public square. I think what's wonderful about these ways of thinking about the world and these forms of engaging the world is that they're not just about the solitary person in the library or home late at night reading a great book, though that's certainly part of the experience. But it's really about the public square, about people being able to engage in ideas and in the discussion of ideas in a meaningfully public way. You know, we forget sometimes that the very founding of the American Republic was a public humanities moment. It was hundreds, thousands of people engaged in a very powerful public discussion about the appropriate form of political life and about how to get there. The Federalist Papers, after all, which were the arguments around the Constitution and what the Constitution should look like, were published in newspapers, and they were kind of out in the world as people struggled with this question of what should the country look like, what should the fundamental structure of the government look like. A brilliant moment of public humanities, and we ought to value and try to recreate that sort of image as often as we can in public, because I think your caller is right that those things can bring us together in new ways. Part of the problem, I think, in public discourse currently is that we're all locked into these separate channels of communication. We don't think outside of our own inclinations very often, and that's certainly not been helpful.
Thank you, Kathy. Jeff in Fond du Lac is with us now. Hello, Jeff.
Yeah, good morning. I've come a little bit late into the discussion, but I believe what I'm understanding is that your guest is insinuating that in order to have clear thought or unaltered thought, that you have to attend college or be educated in the humanities to do such. And I think that's just incredibly arrogant. I think it's unfortunate that people who appear to associate in cloistered cultures, as such your guest might be participating in, has no idea the cost that the little guy working in the machine shop is paying for the freedom that he has and for the dreams and culture that he strives for his children. And college is not necessary to have those dreams.
What about
thank you for the question. I don't think I was insinuating that. I certainly didn't say it. I care a lot about all dimensions of public life and all the people who might be involved in it. As I was saying earlier, our democratic political culture really depends upon everyone's engagement and comprehension of elements of American history, elements of our democratic political structure, and the way in which citizens can be active and strong parts of the world that we share. I'm just as interested in the way that secondary education is structured. I do believe that the aspiration to higher education ought to be available to every American. I think that is a much more democratic and sympathetic way to look at things and at people than saying that there are just some people that shouldn't have that opportunity. So I flatly disagree with the notion that there are some people destined to never experience higher education. But I'm not talking just about higher education. I'm talking about secondary education as well, where I think, again, this education of the whole person is enormously important, and that we have to be committed to that.
Yeah. What value do the humanities have for that little guy in the machine shop, as Jeff described?
Well, as I've already said, I think everybody should be valuing citizenship and should be participating in citizenship. But everybody comes from a certain cultural and historical context. Everybody belongs to a community, and everybody has a stake in collective memory and the valuing of our cultural heritage, whether it's in small communities, large communities, complex communities, simple communities. We all have these anchors in culture, our own cultures, our traditions, and the humanities are very much involved in caring about preserving those traditions and making people's lives better through that kind of preservation and acquaintance. So whether you work in a machine shop or whether you work in the White House, whether you work in a farm or in a in a corporation, we all have these cultural anchors. We all have these stakes in our communities. in the way those communities value and remember their history, in the ways we identify with the people around us. I spoke at a commencement ceremony at Miami-Dade College a month or so ago. 165,000 students, the biggest community college in the country. These students are going to go out in the world and do all kinds of things, but denying them access to things that give them access to certain parts of our culture and certain experiences within our culture, I think is deeply unfair, and I think it's undemocratic to treat those people fundamentally different than anybody else.
We are talking with the chair of the National Endowment for the Humanities, Bro Adams, about the importance of the humanities in our daily lives. Talking some about the NEH's new initiative, Common Good, the Humanities in the Public Square, which aims to demonstrate the important role the humanities can play, that humanities scholarship can play in our public life. And we're welcoming your thoughts and your questions on the role of the humanities. How important are they to you? How about a liberal arts education or a humanities-focused education? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking about the humanities during this hour with the chair of the National Endowment for the Humanities and welcoming your thoughts and questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our next caller is Lori in Hales Corners. Hi, Lori.
Hi. Joy, I really appreciate the value of the humanities. In high school, I had an experience as part of a social studies class, and my gosh, we had to get out the vote campaign for elections. And we put posters in store windows, and we helped people even drive and walk them, you know, if they were the ambulatory disabled. I mean, because we valued the people stepping up and carrying out some of the things we were learning about in our social studies class. And furthermore, I belong to the League of Women Voters after that, probably because of that experience. And we helped people with, in nursing homes to do the absentee balloting. And, oh, my, those people should have had that experience in the humanities because they were asking about, oh, he's a good Irishman. Should I vote for him? You know, it was that stuff. They didn't know. They didn't have a background for making decisions about their voting. So I'm all for it.
Well, a reaction, Bro Adams.
Well, thank you for the question and for the statement. I completely agree in the sense that I think one of the fundamental values of humanities education, particularly in high schools, but also in colleges and universities, should be civic engagement. That is to say, how do we encourage students to engage the world outside the classroom and to become to imagine themselves becoming active participants in that world. And I completely agree with Lori that the you know, high school curriculum and the college curriculum ought to have very significant moments where students are required to take their knowledge out into the world and to find how they can discover how they can connect it to the things that are going on around them. So I'm all in favor of civic engagement as a fundamental value of high school and college curriculum. And it does have to do with, in great part, the humanities and the social sciences. Those are places in which we can imagine and arrange experiences of civic engagement, which, as in Laurie's case, will be very, very significantly formative of their dispositions, students' dispositions, as they grow and become adults.
A quick comment on a movement going on across the country, different states, including Wisconsin, wanting to make high school graduates pass a civics test or even the, you know, the citizenship test before graduating from high school?
I think it depends a lot on how we imagine those kinds of tests and what they actually concretely involve. I've already expressed my worry about an overemphasis on testing. So in that subject and in others, I would want to know a lot more about how people are imagining the test. But you can't have a test without having a curriculum. And I think the first step is to agree that civic engagement in a democratic sense is, you know, a fundamental value that we ought to be encouraging in secondary education. And that has to involve humanities education.
Scott in New Glarus is with us. Hello, Scott.
Yes, good morning. I was quite incensed by that previous caller who talked about the guy working in a machine shop or a factory, you know, kind of carrying people that read books or are more interested in intellectual pursuits. I'm a carpenter, and I do that for a living, but I like to read, I like to travel, I like to be civically engaged, as I would think that we would want anyone to be, no matter what their work is. And, you know, that kind of attitude that guy talked about, that previous caller, is that whole pitting one group against the other and the breeding of anti-intellectualism. We all benefit from what we all do, whether it's working in a factory or trying to come up with ways to engage the populace in civics. And so this whole divide and conquer thing is really kind of getting out of hand, and it just makes me angry that people can't be more, you know, thinking that we're all in this together.
Thank you, Scott. I was going to follow up on that with Bro Adams. We're hearing a lot of that in Wisconsin these days.
Well, I'm sorry you're hearing a lot of it. I wish that weren't the case. I deeply appreciate Scott's point of view. Our original legislation that was signed by Lyndon Johnson in 1965 on September 29th, we're about to have our 50th anniversary, had a very interesting phrase. It said the humanities belong to all the people of the United States, and I absolutely agree with that. And this notion that it's good for some people and not others, or the notion that the pursuit of the humanities, the pursuit of human understanding and our understanding of ourselves as a people is somehow an elitist proposition is, I think, deeply unfortunate, because, again, I think the democratic impulse and the democratic persuasion requires us to imagine that all citizens need to be and can be in the possession of these forms of understanding and knowledge. So I appreciate the sentiment, Scott, very much.
Yeah. Thanks for the call, Scott. What do you make, Bro Adams, of, though, the criticism that we are wasting taxpayer money by offering majors in the ancient mating habits of whatever, that was something that came up in the Wisconsin legislature, or that, you know, one person's graduating from this obscure major, that it's not worth the money to fund it?
Well, I'd observe that, you know, we'll never have perfect agreement about majors or disciplines or subjects within disciplines. We'll never have perfect agreement on what's important and what's not. Just as in scientific research, we're never going to agree as to whether or not a specific avenue of research is productive. One of the, of course, essential features of research is that you don't go into it knowing completely what's on the other side, which is why you go into it, and sometimes there's something significant, and sometimes there's not. That's just the nature of research. But what we can agree on, I think, is principles of general education. And that's where we should be focusing our attention. We should be focusing on what are the things that all students need to have as equipment, if I can put it that way, to be productive, successful, engaged members of the world that they're going to occupy. And I think it's there in the context of talking about general forms of knowledge and education that we really have to come to some kind of agreement, and where, you know, cutting out humanistic understanding and knowledge is, again, as I said earlier, is a huge mistake. And we will rue the day as a democracy and as an advanced society when we do that. You know, we've all been impressed in recent times with, you know, the extraordinary success and sort of brilliance of certain kinds of technology and technology-based corporations. Apple is probably the one that comes to mind. But try to imagine what Apple would have been, or Steve Jobs would have been, without that extraordinarily creative imagination. And, you know, Steve Jobs, some of his earliest inspirations came from studying certain, you know, forms of writing and script, and he was very, very deeply influenced by some of his exposure to the humanities and the arts early in his life, and he talked quite a bit about that through his life. Imagine Apple without these people with this ability to have these extraordinarily powerful ideas that are really ideas about design and the application of design to human life and interaction.
We have Paul in Richland Center in just a couple of minutes. Paul, very briefly, what did you want to say?
Well, I also want to respond to the guy that called in about the machinist. I was a 32-year veteran communication humanities instructor in the Wisconsin Technical College system, and I had many a machinist student. The skill that I was asked to teach them was the ability of critical thinking, to listen to a customer's problem in order to decipher and fabricate a part, to be able to read a blueprint, to read a problem and be able to critically think through what the part is. And I found that very few people have that skill naturally. It has to be taught. Yeah. And it doesn't make any difference whether you're a machinist, an auto mechanic, or whatever you are. Technicians need the humanities just as much as anybody else does.
Bro Adams?
Yeah, I completely agree. And I would just extend that thought a little bit and say that we tend to undervalue the ways in which various aspects of liberal, what I'm calling liberal learning, influence general patterns of thought. And I think the caller, it makes a fine point that our ability to think through these complex problems and challenges, our ability to apply imagination to our work, our ability to communicate powerfully in writing and in speaking about whatever we have in front of us, those are hugely consequential in any kind of professional environment. And if you don't have them, you're not going to succeed at nearly the level that you could with those skills. So yeah. I completely agree that those are created in interaction with humanities material in some very significant ways.
30 seconds. What do you want for your 50th birthday for the NEH?
Well, we're going to be doing everything we can to make more people more powerfully aware of what we do. But I think we also want to make the kinds of arguments that and associations that we've been talking about how important and, in fact, useful, really useful, fundamentally useful the humanities are in all kinds of domains of public life.
Thank you so much for being with us. Bro Adams, chairman of the National Endowment for the Humanities. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.